A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 30, 2003, entitled Life Broken and Poured Out, in the series The Vulnerability of God. The texts for the sermon are 1 John chapter 4, verses 7, 8, 16, and 19, and Luke 1. Verses 46 through 55. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
It's embarrassing to grow so old and get so late smart. But then when you're a late bloomer like me, you don't have much of an alternative. It was 2 years ago and I was struck with an insight that for me registered deeply and profoundly and has been very significant in my own thinking in these last couple of years. It was the insight as I was preparing for Advent 2001. I'm sure you remember the series. Anybody give me the title now? Well, it was God mirrored, God as mirrored in Christmas, the God who is mirrored in the Christmas story. And the thing that struck me at that time as I was working through my own sense of Advent was that there was a tension in the gospel, a tension between the God imaged in the Christmas story and the God imaged in the Advent theme. Now, that was probably, it might have been the same time, perhaps it was a year earlier, as I was, again, coming to Advent. You know, when you're so deeply traditioned in all of this, you just come to that season and you know what the theme is and you develop it, but I came to a point, it was that year or a year or two earlier, I'm not sure, when I simply announced to you that the Advent theme, the one who came is coming again, is a theme that I no longer really honestly believe. I announced on that particular year that Jesus wasn't coming again. That was the Sunday I went home and Nancy just looked at me and said, "You don't know everything." But I couldn't any longer carry on with the biblical picture because, frankly, that idea of history moving toward its end, an end that was expected at the time of Jesus and has been expected at every rather critical moment in human history since then, and is still a bestseller today. That's a different conception of reality, of cosmology, of world history than I hold, and I think most of us hold, really, if we think about it. We think in terms of that, Dr. Ventil tells me it's not 15 billion, it's 13.7 billion years. The cosmic process, that dramatic unfolding, cooling of the elements, eons and eons and eons of time, and the appearance of life, and then human life and self-consciousness, and human community, world history. And if we are Christian in our understanding, then the fullness of time and the incarnation of the Word, or the enfleshment, the embodiment of God in the human. That's really how we think today. That process continuing, with it having emerged in the likes of us, so that we really know that the future is in our hands. And so that old traditional Advent theme was not working for me anymore, but the thing 2 years ago that struck me was the contrast between the image of God in the Christmas story and the image of God in that traditional Advent theme. The difference between a God of vulnerability, a vulnerability vividly expressed in the birth of a child, in contrast to the God who comes for redemption and judgment at the end, to wrap up all things and to right the wrongs and to separate the righteous and the unrighteous and to bring redemption to those who have repented and believed, and eternal condemnation to those who have not. That traditional Advent theme just wasn't working anymore, but the image of God in that theme was in such contrast to the image of God that comes to expression in Christmas. And so I want to revisit that with you this year. I want to talk about the vulnerability of God, the vulnerability of God that we'll see in the Christmas story, because I am so convinced that it is only in the embodiment of the image of God we see in the Christmas story that gives us a possibility for a human future. Until we have been able to imbibe what came to expression in Christmas and embody that which was embodied in Jesus, frankly, we don't have a prayer. And so, the vulnerability of God. Now, I have to say, in all honesty, that the biblical story has, between the Christmas event and the Advent theme, a consistency, and that is that both of them understand a God hovering off in the wings, a supernatural being, sovereign and in control, who comes now and again to intervene. The God who came into human history in the birth of Jesus, and the God who will come into human history in the coming again of Jesus. In the biblical understanding of things, there is a consistency between that image of God who comes in. But my point is this: the God who comes in at Christmas and the God who comes in the end are entirely different. And finally, I make a choice. I want to be very honest about that. I choose to worship, to serve, to love the God of Christmas, the God of Advent judgment and vengeance is not compelling to me anymore. And frankly, I think that we become the God we image. And therefore, it is so critical that we image God aright. And I want to suggest to you that for the future of humanity, it is the God of Christmas that I believe we are called to embody if we really hear the gospel. Because there is a consistency in the God mirrored in Christmas, in the child, and the God mirrored in the life of Jesus and the ministry of Jesus. The God mirrored in the birth of Jesus and the life of Jesus to the crucifixion of Jesus is consistent. That is a God of vulnerability. From the vulnerability of the crib to the vulnerability of the cross, from the child to the one who's being crucified, could pray, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. There is a consistent imaging forth. To the extent that we see Jesus as our window into God, that God is a God of vulnerability. That God is a God of persuasive love, not coercive power. And I believe the difference makes all the world, is a whole world. Mary in the Magnificat sings beautifully. Luke, in telling the story decades later, puts the words of the Israeli prophet in the lips of Mary, and she praises God for God's mercy to her, a lowly handmaid of the Lord. And then she praises God for what God will do for God's people. For God's people, this little people, an underdog people, a poor people, a suffering people. This people always had it within their hearts that the way things were is not the way things ought to be. They always had it deeply written within the depths of their being that there was an alternative possibility. And they always believed that they, little insignificant people they were in a corner of the globe, were going to know a time when there would be a grand reversal, when the fortunes of this people would be turned upside down, when the values of world culture would be overcome and replaced by the shalom of God. For this was the people of whom the prophet Isaiah had sung of a new creation, when the lion and the lamb would lie down together, and when where no one would hurt or destroy in all God's holy mountain, where Micah could sing of bringing their plowshares, their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, where nation would not lift up war against nation, nor would they learn war anymore. This was the people of a grand vision. And I think it was reflective of something that was so deep, some intuitive sense that there was another possibility. Mary, having been encountered by an angel, told that there will be an imminent conception by the Holy Spirit and the birth of a child who will be called the Son of God. Mary goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth, and Elizabeth herself, pregnant, finds the child leaping within her womb, confirming the angel's message to Mary. And Mary breaks out into song and says, "Oh God, how merciful to me. Oh God, how merciful to us." For now, Mary believed that this was the time. Luke, telling the story, believed it. This was the time of that great intervention when the sovereign of history would move, and the great transformation of values, when the poor and the hungry would be fed, when the mighty would be cast down from their thrones, and those downtrodden would be lifted up. Ah, a grand vision. Again, wasn't it simply the dream of a people who were living a life that they knew was not reflective of what could be, what should be? Well, when Jesus was crucified, having consistently revealed the vulnerability of God, the church lost that understanding of God and was waiting for that second coming, that coming of the avenging God who would bring not only salvation, but condemnation. And yet, in the church, we've never quite been able to get over the God of Christmas. Look at what we've just done. We've just come to this table, a table in which bread was broken and the wine was poured out. And as Dominic Crossan told us one Sunday morning here, when body and blood are separated, it speaks of a violent death. A violent death of one who lived the vulnerability of God. The violent death of one who embodied the vulnerability of God, which was a threat to established church and state, law and order. He was crucified. And yet, in the church, we've never quite been able to forget the dangerous memory of Jesus. Oh, we've transformed it. We made the prophet into a priest. We've made his death the means of personal salvation received at the altar. We've lost the vulnerability of God that came to expression in him, which was the reason he was crucified. So he transformed that prophetic life into a salvation experience. But we never quite get away from it. Every time we celebrate the supper, it's life broken and poured out. And that's the story. That's the God mirrored in Christmas. That's the vulnerability of God. And I think only to the extent that we could recapture and embody that vulnerability of God, which came to expression in Jesus, only to that extent do we have a human future. For Mary sang about the powerful being dethroned and the hungry being fed. But it hasn't happened in the subsequent 2,000 years. And we continue to live in the old system of domination and exploitation. And it is not vulnerability, but it is invulnerability that we seek personally and as a nation, which is pretty much a universal situation. Invulnerability is what we want, but we never quite forget. Every time we break the bread and take the cup, that it is life broken and poured out, wherein lies our hope. And so, on this first Sunday in Advent. I suppose you're saying to me, okay, one more romp into romanticism, one more hopeless, idealistic season. Perhaps you're saying to me, I don't really believe what you say about the vulnerability of God or the possibility of that ever holding sway in the human situation. Well, I hear you. And yet there was a time within our memory when we might have tried it. Do you remember the euphoria in the late 80s with the falling of the Berlin Wall? Do you remember how hopeful we all were? And then, of course, because we had had two superpowers teetering on the brink of disaster with an impasse of terror, when that shield was broken, there was all kinds of eruption of human cussedness. Wars, tribal wars, ethnic wars. But the first President Bush had spoken about a new world order, and you know, it was a moment, it was a rare moment in human history. Not many moments in human history when there is one nation that commands so much supremacy in power and resource that it can act unilaterally in any direction at any time it pleases. That was our situation. And to a certain extent, it still may be our situation. But what did we do with that window of opportunity? We began to talk about a unipolar world. But a unipolar world, no matter how idealistic is the landscape envisioned, a unipolar world continues to be a world of domination and exploitation. And then the turn of the millennium, then we began to hear talk about rogue nations. I sat on this stool and said, I don't like to hear about rogue nations. Couldn't we sit down with rogue nations and say, tell us your dreams? Why are you so aggressive? Why are you a threat to global peace? What is at the bottom of your agitation? We are the one people in the world that had the power and the resource to change the nature of the game. But then 9/11 happened, and then in the State of the Union Address of 2002, there was the axis of evil identified and the drumbeat toward preemptive war. And it's the same old world. It's a world of power politics. It's a world of domination. And the mighty are still not put down off their thrones, and the poor are not yet fed. And the world reels on its way. In the grip of fear, insecurity, and alienation. You see, my point is, I may be a romantic fool, but look at where business as usual has gotten us. Christmas is coming. And the world will become for a season a softer place. And that which lives deeply in the human being, that deep intuitive insight, will know again that the way things are is not the way they have to be. That the way things are is not the way they should be. And we'll look on the face of a child and we'll remember that child whom we believe was the embodiment of God, lived a life of vulnerability, issuing in a life broken and poured out. And there will be something whispering out of our depths. There is love. And love is ultimate. John said, God is love. John said, no one has ever seen God. But the one who dwells in love abides in God, and God abides in that one. John said, the one who dwells in love dwells in God, and God dwells in that one. God is love, and we love because God first loved us. And if we have a deep intuitive sense about another way, it's because it's in our depths. For if we are right to see the heart of God in the face of Jesus, then God is a vulnerable God. Invulnerability is what we really want personally and as a nation. We want invulnerability because we're afraid. And we become defensive. And we alienate in the strange. We want invulnerability. We want to be strong. It's not true. It is vulnerability that takes strength and courage and is the expression of love, which is the expression of God. Thank God in the church there's a table where we keep breaking bread and pouring wine. And the dangerous memory of Jesus keeps egging us on toward something better.